Hey, Tom.
Hey, Alan.
This is an interesting turn of events. The Not a Thing podcast is still going. You are listening to the correct show, but Brendan is on kind of forced vacation for a week. His
Maternity leave.
yes, his internet baby is coming shortly. I guess on Friday, he moved into a new place and his internet is being turned up later because we record our shows remotely from each other. We're never in the same room, although it hopefully sounds at least somewhat close to us being in the same room. We've actually recorded most of our shows via Google Hangout, and so this week, rather than not record a show, we're having on a special guest. Tom Watson.
Hey everybody, you might remember me from such not a thing podcast as The Hobbit.
Yeah. We spent what I consider an inordinate amount of time talking about frame rates and character development and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it was fun, and we've joked in previous podcasts that when The Desolation of Smog comes out, we're gonna have to have you on to discuss it at
All
length.
right, all right. We'll be happy to be back then.
This week, I thought it would be cool because I saw on Twitter, Face Plus, whatever the social networking medium of the time was, that you went to a game convention this weekend.
I did. I went to the first ever Gamer X, originally called Gamer Con, but apparently there was some kind of legal issue with that, so it changed its name to Gamer X. That's GAYMER X. This was a gaming con. It was here in Japantown in San Francisco, specifically aimed at LGBT gamers and their allies. So really pretty cool. I think they funded this originally through a Kickstarter project, and they actually had a panel about Kickstarter as well, and so we got a little more information about what went right and wrong in terms of that. But I think their expectations originally were that if they could get 500 people, they would consider the con a success. And they ended up having something like 3,500 registrants.
That's rad.
Yeah, really, really pretty awesome. I think it's, yeah, I think it definitely portends a shift in the way that that diverse voices are being heard. I think we've seen that in the past year with feminism in gaming, and I think we're going to see that now with LGBT gaming as well.
Yeah, I looked at the list of speakers and the panels that we're going through. And I mean, it was very. It looks like a big deal. There were a lot of really cool sounding talks. So you mentioned the Kickstarter one, and I saw that too. Only because I guess it was. You're right. It was primarily initially funded by a Kickstarter, which is great because I mean you learn immediately of the paying audience, right? You gauge the paying
Right.
audience immediately off that. Were there other panels that you went to?
Yes. I went to a sort of a sampling of panels both days, and I have to say the only complaint that I have about the con is that, and it was a first year, so it's kind of understandable, but the programming was a bit uneven. Some of the panels were really great, and some of them not so good. Although I guess that's true at many cons, but and it also seemed like there was a real focus on journalism and gaming reviews and writing. Maybe a little larger than there were people who actually are doing that, but it may have been that that's who they had available on the committee for this first time. But I think that it definitely was successful enough that it shows that this is something that they can repeat. And I suspect the programming will only get better and more diverse. But let's see, yeah, I went to we went to a voice acting panel. Actually, on the first day, my fiance Jeff, who is actually the connection between Alan and me, Jeff and Alan went to high school together. And so that's how we first met when I moved here to California. But he's not a gamer, but he did go with me the first day. and got to experience a little bit of my world from inside. So that was really interesting, and I think especially that was kind of a neat introduction, the voice acting panel, because two of the guests of honors were Ellen McLean and her husband John Patrick Lowery, and
Oh, yeah.
Ellen, of course, is the voice of GLaDOS from Portal, the Portal series, and her husband also is a voice actor. He's mostly done games I'm not as familiar with because he tends to do a lot of shooters. I guess he's best known as the sniper from Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, I unfortunately that was like the that's a Valve game if I'm remembering right, and it's in kind of the Half-Life universe, and I only played the single player games in that universe. I never played the multiplayer, so.
Yeah, and I haven't really played any of them, but I think he has done. I think they're fairly connected with Valve and do a number of their games. But so they did a panel about how to break into voice acting and what's involved and how it's acting and not just announcing. And then the highlight of that, and that was a 2-hour panel, the highlight of that was at the very end, he pulled out a banjo and accompanied the entire group in singing Still Alive from Portal. And after we did that, she called up a guy who was visiting from Belgium up to the stage and proceeded to sing two new verses to the same tune that were a marriage proposal from his fiance who lives here in the States. And the whole room got a little teary and
Oh, sure.
cheery. It was really pretty awesome.
Oh, that's really setting the bar for next year, I
And so not only did she sing the wedding proposal to him, but then he came up as well afterwards, and he had the ring inside a little companion cube.
Oh, of course.
And then they invited everyone out to the bar for companion cube-shaped cake pops.
Wow.
So yeah, that was definitely, that set a bar on Saturday night that was a little hard to get past.
That's cool. I mean, that's the kind of thing that that I love about going to conventions. I'm going to the Penny Arcade Expo at the end of the month, and there's always just a lot of fun stuff going on. I mean, there are panels, and I think you're right. There is kind of a or at least the last 2 years I've gone, there is kind of an emphasis on the gaming reviewing kind of population. I think there are a lot of people that kind of believe themselves to be or want to be, aspire to be, I guess, kind of people who review games either in I don't know if people still want to do it in actual print, but in text form, or definitely as podcasts or in video form. That's very, very common. And so those panels tend to skew kind of odd and be very just very like overly specific. But I really love the panels where just fun stuff happens. It's ones where people are will reveal a little bit more about what's happening with the games, just more behind the scenes kind of stuff. It's like watching, DVD commentaries, but live.
And so yeah, so the I did go to a couple of the journalism panels, but what I found more valuable were actually there were several panels that had representatives from BioWare was there, EA was there, and there has been a lot of controversy over the last year about some of the LGBT content in games and about the lack thereof,
Sure.
and so a call for more, when there are companions and romance options. There's sort of been a call from our community to make those a little more diverse and a little more open so that people can feel like there's more representation of how they want to play in the game. And there's been some blowback from some members of the gaming community on that. Some people who feel that it's too in the face or there's too much of it. And so there had been, I think BioWare had a really big blowout on their forums over the past year about some of the content in Dragon Age and Dragon Age 2. And so they had their community manager there and the producer of the game. And that was really helpful because we were able to have a real dialogue and to start to talk about sort of what our expectations are. And they gave us advice on how to approach them about the issues that we have in terms of wanting to be more represented in games. So those I found extremely valuable to actually be able to talk to the developers ourselves.
I find it's really interesting. You mentioned the community manager of BioWare, and that has become really a thing in the last just few years. That having someone that runs the social presence through their forum and Twitter accounts and all of that kind of stuff really has become really a powerful position at a company. I mean, it's so much more tied to or the really the how the game kind of proceeds and is perceived is really a matter of the community and that kind of interaction with the community managers.
Yeah, they spent some time talking about Mass Effect, and not specifically from the LGBT perspective, but about the Mass Effect 3 last year, and people were so disappointed with the endings, and that became a really big thing. And the community manager for Mass Effect 3 was on that panel, and she talked about that being really the first time that she finally felt like she was part of the development team, because it became so clear that that's where these conversations were taking place, was out there in social media and on the web. And she was the one who was having to find that and filter it and to take the messages back to the team. And BioWare ended up doing something really extraordinary. They actually then released a new set of endings as free DLC. That really does, it shows the power that actually we can be heard, and sometimes even have an impact, not just on future game development, but sometimes even on the specific game.
And that's the another piece of it that's new and always interesting to me is that, that game is a shipped game and they're essentially still evolving it even though it's already out. I mean, it's a major shift from, it's released and that's it, and you never look at it again. I mean, even that, which is a single player game, for the most part, I think there are all multiplayer options for
Yeah,
that,
it has
but
multiplayer as well, but it's primarily single player.
right, even for a single player game, which is for the most part kind of fixed, it's not an online kind of always on game like World of Warcraft or something like that. Even for games like that, they can still be kind of tweaked and changed a little bit, and I think for the most part for the better. It's not necessarily it's not a like revisionist history kind of thing, or at least hopefully not. I think there were clearly voices that were very strong in building it, and I'm sure there was debate inside before it was released, and so it. I think validating that with the community is kind of a big thing, and I think especially for I think it's hopeful for the companies will still take that kind of feedback. I mean, even with games that are shipping, so games that are coming up in the future, I think the whole just the existence of the Gamer X convention is hopeful.
Oh, I think so. And they talked some in that panel about all the telemetry that they actually get from people who are playing the game. So, in many cases, I'm not sure if you opt in or have to actually opt out, but they're collecting information about what decision trees you're following. So, what choices you've made in the game, which companions you've elected to recruit into your party, and how far you've gone with them, and whether you take the romance options and which romance options. And so that's been really helpful. Now, they said they have to be careful with that because that's just a bunch of data, and they can look at correlation, but not necessarily causation. But it's been really helpful in terms of pushing back on some of these complaints that they've gotten about people saying that, well, now there's too much gay content. You know, if every character is available for a same-sex or an opposite-sex romance, that's not true to the real world. And they get many players saying, you know, we don't choose those, and so we don't think anyone does. You know, it's that kind of in their bubble. They talk to a couple of friends and say, well, we didn't play the game that way, so nobody plays the game that way. But they actually see the way that people play the games, and they actually said that 20% of players choose a same-sex romance option at one point or another. So people are exploring these, even people who aren't part of the LGBT community are, you know, taking advantage of some of these opportunities to play in a different way, to explore some new themes. And now they also said it wouldn't matter even if that number were much smaller. They're not making their decisions necessarily based on that. That sometimes a decision is important, even if 95% of the players take another root in a tree, having that choice is important anyway, because there's still a story shift there. Even if most people don't, there's still something that tells, you know, that it's part of the understanding of what the world is and your part in it. So that was really, really nice to hear that they aren't relying just on numbers, but that they are also not letting just the loudest, squeakiest wheels dictate what they do, that they are recognizing that the gaming community is not monolithic and that there are a lot of different people playing games these days. The one thing that was kind of unfortunate at GamerX was that the number of women in attendance was still pretty low. You know, these days we hear that women are 47% or so of gamers, although I guess my understanding is that they tend to be overrepresented in social gaming and online gaming, but maybe less so in console gaming. And so I had hoped that maybe there would be a higher percentage there. And among staff, volunteers, and vendors, I'd say it was pretty close to 50-50. But among the actual paid attendees, it was probably more like 10 or 15%.
Interesting. Yeah, I think for the Penny Arcade Expo, I wouldn't say it's I definitely wouldn't say it's 50-50 in the on the floor for the games. I mean, there are definitely more men than women there. So I don't know. I think though that it's a convention atmosphere kind of thing too. And I'm not going to make, you know, generalizations about how that works, but I think there are probably a lot more dynamics there than just, you know, strictly bringing the numbers over and interest.
Right. I mean, I think that there's an economic issue as well in conventions in general, that, you know, women often are underpaid compared to men, and often are the ones, you know, who are expected to be at home raising the children. And lesbian couples, statistically are poorer than gay male couples or opposite sex couples. So there are probably some economic things going on as well.
I mean, I think the what would be interesting, and I don't know if those kind of statistics are necessarily even measured, let alone published in anything, are going back to like the community kind of measurement, because I mean, it essentially you need an internet connection and you're in the community kind of a thing. But I don't know if I don't think I've never been polled like for my sexual orientation status, like or even my gender, like going into a gaming website. So I think that would be an interesting set of metrics, but again, it would just be like one set. What was it, just video and console gaming? Was it or was it other kinds of gaming too?
No, there were other kinds of gaming. There was one room for tabletop gaming. I didn't actually participate in any of the real gaming. I mostly just went to the panels. But yeah, there was a room for tabletop gaming. There was a room for card gaming, and then there was a room full of consoles as well. So it really had it covered. And in the vendor room, I'd say that actually the vendors were mostly tabletop and board and card games. In the pack, so we had VIP badges because I had been a fairly high-level Kickstarter participant, and so there were some giveaways in the bag, and we each got a deck of Flux cards. But it turns out it's actually an older version than the one that we already have. But they were there. They were there selling Flux and all of the Pirate Flux and Zombie Flux and Eco Flux and Space Flux. And there was a brand new one that I can't remember now what it was that they were just showing off there this weekend. And there was a new castle defense board game that was being shown, and a card game that had to do with bear attacks. So there were some interesting things. So yes, it was kind of nice. And it wasn't just gaming, although it was primarily. There also was just sort of more general geek culture stuff going on. A lot of a number of vendors who were there who were engaged in web comics.
Oh,
And in
cool.
fact, a couple of the sponsors of the con, one of them was called Prince of Cats, which is a web comic about a budding relationship between two young high school friends. And then Zach Wiener, who does Saturday Morning Breakfast cereal, was one of the major sponsors, and he's not, in fact, gay or bi himself, but he's a straight ally and just felt very strongly about how important this was, and so was a very early supporter, made some videos to help the Kickstarter campaign, and was there all weekend, really. He was on a lot of panels, and he was there on the Kickstarter panel too, because apparently they've funded several print versions of their webcomic through Kickstarter.
Kind of jumping topic slightly. Are you generally a Kickstarter person? Because I know that I've joked if my direct deposit could just be funneled directly to Kickstarter and Etsy, I would probably be happy.
I had to like remove my pinned tab for Kickstarter because I was just spending way too much money on Kickstarter campaigns. So I've pulled back a little bit, but yeah, I was having a con oh, I guess it was actually at your house recently. Ahmed and I were talking about our Kickstarter addictions. But yeah, I mostly funded games, a couple of technology products. I actually funded the Pebble watch and was one of the people who actually managed to get my watch. They had a lot of problems with production. And Jeff has used it. I guess he mostly does Indiegogo because that's where a lot of the arts and dance projects are, but he has funded several dance-related films. That's my fiance, Jeff, is. We joke and say that he's a dance geek, a ballet geek, and I guess I'm just a more general geek.
How did he do after day one? Is the marriage still on?
And marriage is still on. Yes, I think he had a good time. He didn't go back for day two, but only because he did have he had some dance classes the next days, but he after his classes were over, he came and joined me, and so we did do a couple of panels together again at the very end of day two. The other thing that was really cool was that the con was in Japantown, and it turned out that this past weekend was the Nihonmachi annual street fair, and that was going on at the same time, and they did a lot of really nice cross promotion. It was really great to see that the local San Francisco, Japantown community really embraced this con, and so they had one stage. There were several stages. There was a main stage with music going on at the street fair, but then there was a smaller stage next to the con hotel that was branded for the GamerX, and they actually, I think, they did some music there. But they also did. That's where they did the costume contest for the con. They did a drag show there during one of the hours. So it was really, really nice to see the. And then as we were walking through the street fair, we saw so many people with con badges. So
Oh,
it brought
sure.
in a lot of new faces and wallets for the fair, which was really cool to see.
That's great. I know when PAX descends on Seattle for it's now 4 days in Seattle. When it was 3 days, it was the kind of thing where there's just like thousands of geeks running around, many of which in kind of various weird costumes, kind of filling all the local businesses. And my sister-in-law, who lives near there, she doesn't live in Seattle proper, but she knows that everyone is just like, we have to avoid downtown Seattle for the next like 3 days. So it's cool to see the locals kind of getting into the spirit.
Yeah, there wasn't as much cosplay as I had thought there might be, but yeah, probably the next time around there will be more now that people have been and have seen that. I mean, they were encouraging it. They did have a they had some programming based specifically around it, but it was much lighter than at other conventions I've been to.
Yeah, I've really I know people that like any excuse, and they're in the costumes. So I'm still working to see if I can build something up for at least one of the days for PAX. I'm going to be there for 4 days. It would be great to do just 1 day dressed up. We actually haven't because we have to travel to do it. So it's like it would have to be something that we would. Would wear on the way up, but my wife Julie has dressed up for conventions in the past, and I've kind of not really actually not specifically for conventions, but I do love a good Halloween costume, so I might be able to repurpose something, make it work.
Yes, as anyone who has been to one of their wonderful Halloween parties, we always are really looking forward to seeing what Alan and Julie are going to be. It's something that we, you know, that we I've not really done much costume at cons, but Halloween is another place. I mean, we really enjoy that too.
Yeah, I mean, you and Jeff get into it. I mean, I remember I want to say it was the first year we had you over, and you were doing the it was the oh no, was it the kind of like 60s kind of theme?
It was we. I don't think it was the first year, but we were the. Yeah, we were two characters from Mad Men
Okay. Yeah.
one year,
I wasn't sure if it was
and
specifically Mad
specifically,
Men,
yeah,
but yeah.
it was because in fact, Jeff even brought his board with his advertising pitch.
Oh, the charts. Yes.
And we were the flight attendants one year, and we had
Oh,
a
and the
tray with drinks, and I had actually made a an oxygen mask. To and Jeff printed out little
safety
guidelines, little comical
instructions.
guidelines on safety
Yeah.
instructions. Yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant. I love it. I do really enjoy that kind of stuff for the conventions. And I noticed that there were also concerts at the con. I don't know if you went to any of those.
We didn't. There was a well, there was a VIP dance the night before started, and we didn't get to that. And then the next night there was a concert, and it was mostly it looked like mostly chiptunes music, and I just wasn't sure that I could stand that for more than 5 or 10
So thank you. So I adore chiptunes music. I can't see it live. It doesn't work at all because it's all on a synth, so you're not seeing anything happen really. Although I think there was one band, only because I looked the list up, and I might check out their stuff. I think it was called Crash Faster. I might have gotten that wrong, but the one of the bands was mostly chiptunes, but they did have it sounded like they had live drums and live vocals, all heavily processed. But that kind of stuff I'm fine with. If they're as long as there are people kind of jumping around and doing stuff, I'm there.
Yeah, crash faster. That was that. You're right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So no, we didn't get to hear them.
Yeah.
I guess,
No, go ahead.
man, just old. You know, just staying out late at night for a concert and then having to get up early for the con again. You know, if we were staying at the con hotel, which we thought about doing, and we didn't end up doing that, but then we probably would, because that's what it's all about. You know, you know that you're not going to get any sleep.
Right.
But the fact that we had to get back to Daly City and then back down into the city in the morning, yeah, I'm just old.
Well, there was, I mean, knowing your limits for that kind of thing is a good thing. So I can tell you the story of the first PAX we went to, however many years ago that was. I think it was 4 years ago. The one of the main draws was that they had a rock band stage, and you could play rock band on a stage with this huge projection behind you, and they had little screens for each instrument, so it's like you were on stage. So instead of the monitor speakers at the front of the stage, you had like monitors that were what were you know, what part you were doing or everything. So it was very professional, very fun. We ended up staying out there so late that we missed the last train home. So we had to pay for a very expensive cab ride back to Columbia City from Seattle proper. But we've been able to kind of make it work. But I agree, there is that kind of, you know, party atmosphere at the cons, and that's really fun too.
It is, and I think now that I might regret a little bit that we decided not to stay there, because I think that might have been a little better, because this really was about building community, and the fact that we were sort of going back home at the end of the day, I think distanced us from it a little bit. So next time around, of course, I don't know where it's going to be next year. I know they are planning to hold another one, but even if it's here in San Francisco, I think I'll want to actually be on site the whole time.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was actually just going somewhere completely different. So if you had another sentiment about that, you should finish up.
Oh, not around the con. I was going to ask you what you're playing now.
Oh, that's so funny. That's exactly what I was just about to ask you.
Perfect. All right.
That was what I was trying to ask. Yeah, because I think I remember seeing recently a tweet or a Facebook status about there was something that you've had some late nights, I think, playing something.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was a console game, because I think when I went to look it up, and I tend not to play much on the console, although we have a PS3, but I mostly play PC games. But the big one that I'm playing right now is also a Kickstarter project, Shadowrun Returns.
Oh.
Are you familiar with Shadowrun? Did you ever play the tabletop game or the Genesis
game? I played the Genesis game like a million years ago, and
yeah.
But I've never played the tabletop. I didn't know it was based on a tabletop until I had heard about the Kickstarter.
Yeah. So I used to be a big Shadowrun tabletop gamer, and 20 years ago, and but there hasn't really been anything good out of it in almost that whole time, in at least a decade or more. And so the original one of the original writers of the tabletop game, put together a Kickstarter project, and they actually just shipped the game about 2 weeks ago. And so I've been engrossed in that, because it's a pretty good, it's definitely, in terms of the world, so for those of you who don't know, Shadowrun was a role-playing game originally, and it's a mixture of magic and cyberpunk. So the mm-hmm. idea is that the Mayans' theory about cycles was correct, and that in 2012, which was the year that the Mayan calendar allegedly predicted the end of the world.
Yeah, the world ended.
Right.
We were all
so
there.
What Shadowrun postulated was that actually it was just the end of one cycle, the start of a new, and that these cycles, the level of mana in the world has this natural ebb and flow, and we've been in a low but building point, and so 2012 was when the mana level spiked again, and so people started being born as elves, dwarves, orcs, and trolls, and being able to start doing magic. But it was also set in Seattle in 2060, I think originally 2040, and then each new version of the game has been like another few years. So I think currently it's in 2060 or 2070. But it's sort of after there's been the global collapse of the economy and corporations now run the world. The US and Canada have split into multiple segments. So there's that sort of gritty, almost post-apocalyptic feel, but then there's the cyberpunk and cyberware and cyberdecks and the Matrix, so that side of it. So it's this blend of technology and magic. And I always found that kind of interesting. So I've really been waiting for this game, and it's wonderful to be back in the world. The game has some limitations, and it's a fairly linear, it's a role-playing game, but fairly, well, not just fairly linear, it's extremely linear. But the nice thing about it is that they shipped it with a set of tools, a workshop. And so already people, in 2 weeks it's been out, people are developing a whole bunch of additional modules. So that's
Oh,
kind
that's
of nice
great.
that not only was there just the original game that they shipped, but the idea was that they wanted it then to live on. And so they gave people all of the same tools that they were using to build the game. So that's Yeah, so I've been playing that, and I've also still been trying to get through BioShock Infinite. And now after GamerCon and seeing Ellen McClain again, I need to get back and finish Portal 2. I found it so much more difficult than the original Portal.
Really?
I think I sat through. A couple of people said they thought 2 was easier, but I got through the first one, I think, in like one, 6 to 8 hour setting.
Yeah.
But there have been some puzzles in two that have just really stumped me, and I end up walking away. And because I have enough other things that then I end up getting interested in, I never get back to it. So now that I've heard the voice of GLaDOS again, I feel like I need to get back in and whip some computer butt.
Yeah, oh, I love to. I know there's a point in the game where it they re like the difficulty level I think ramps up quite a bit. So depending on where you are, it's very likely it's a similar point. I mean, I think I mean the interesting thing with the first one is there's pretty much just one mechanic the entire way
Right.
through. And in the second game, there are two color portals, and then at one point you get like these things that are gels that change how you move, and those kind of will affect the game too. And that I there was I mean, it's just a bigger game too, so there's more to run into. Did you ever play that two-player co-op?
No.
Because Portal 2 is wonderful two-player co-op. There's many an hour. Well, I mean, I don't think it was that long. It's a shorter campaign, but there is a two-player co-op, and instead of having the normal kind of orange and blue portal, the other person has kind of a, I think it's purple and yellow. So there's essentially two sets of portals that can happen at any one time. So it also ramps up the difficulty, and there's a lot more kind of timing involved. I think. When people say that the second game was easier than the first one, it's that there's less there's a little auto aiming that happens in the second one that didn't happen in the first one. You have to be like absolutely precise in the first one. And also in the first one, there were a lot of ones where you had to like shoot a portal such that you would fall through the portal again and again and again and build momentum. And
Right.
then still as you're falling, fire another portal off to change your direction. And I think the second game relied less on that because it is a very difficult kind of thing to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I remember the first time that I encountered that, and that was very frustrating. But then once I got the knack of it, then somehow it was okay after that. And I'm not sure. I think it's just some of the new mechanics introduced in two that have really just sort of thrown me for a bit of a loop.
But
And then
it's
I'm also
yeah, go
trying
ahead.
to, I've been doing some more casual gaming where I can, like FTL and Don't
Yeah.
Starve, where I can, just spend 15 or 50 minutes or half an hour at a time. And I just got a new Nexus 7 tablet, so I'm hoping to find some good games. Right now it's being touted as sort of the best gaming tablet that you can buy. And I didn't buy it for gaming, but as long as I have it, I'd like to take advantage of it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I find for the phone and for the tablet that I have, that I end up playing kind of the more much more inane, simple games than I expected. The current kind of obsession right now is a game called Dots, where all you're doing is you're connecting similarly colored adjacent dots. Really not the most horsepower intense game that there could be, but it's I guess it's ju the just casual enough, and I find that the feedback is actually the thing I like most. There's this kind of nice melodic beeping that goes along as your finger drags over dots, and if you complete a square with the dots that you're connecting, it makes a different sound and will actually vibrate the phone. So it's really odd, like the success conditions for or not success, but the what is the word I'm looking for? The things that make me appreciate the game are very different on a smaller form factor than they are for a bigger screen. Like I guess the expectations are just different enough still for me.
I'm still just disappointed that there's not that Technobabble game for Android yet, though. That one that we played with you and
Oh,
Julie, where you
Space
hit
Team.
Space Team. That
Yes.
was one of the most fun games I have played in a long time.
Oh yeah, we'll have to get another game in. We'll have to have you over and run that through for sure. I think for me, the games that are completely enveloping my time, other than that Dots game, which just kind of fills in all the little gaps between things. I am playing console games pretty heavily. I did finish BioShock Infinite, so I won't spoil it. I won't spoil it.
Okay.
How far are you, just incidentally?
Not very far.
Okay. I mean, I
Yeah.
really enjoy the world building that they've done, and the voice acting is great. But my if I have a complaint about it, it's that it didn't need to be a shooter. Like so
Yeah.
much of the story could have been told in so many other ways, but making it a shooter was just one of them, and that's the way they took. I mean, I think it's a good game. I think the story is worth the stuff that you go through. So you should continue to play it. I would love to get your feedback about it more
Well,
too.
story is really what I think that's what I tend to appreciate in games most anyway. I was never, well, that's not always true. I mean, I love Borderlands 2. That's when I really just want to go and just shoot things. That's what I play. But for a long time, I was never into shooters at all. But the BioShock games really did sort of bring me in with the stories.
Oh yeah. Well, the story and the kind of choose your own adventure kind of aspect of it, that your decisions matter conversationally and actions too. I think just it breaks the just the rote kind of linearity of so many of the other shooters that are out there.
Did you play Dishonored?
I wanted to, and I have not.
That's another one that sort of takes that step where, in fact, everything you do changes the very world itself and the way that it's presented to you. And I love that. If you can finish the game in multiple ways. You can use stealth and really not. You can incapacitate people without having to kill them, or you can just go around with a sword and kill people right and left. But the more violent that you play the game, the harsher and darker the world gets.
Oh, interesting.
It's sort of reflecting, the ways that you're changing. And that's
Wow.
been really intriguing. And it really then kind of encourages you to go back and play it to experience both paths. But I love that. I love the way that it's not just conversations, but even the way that you behave,
Oh, that's
the
cool.
way that you approach each puzzle impacts the way that the next part of the world appears to you.
Neat. Yeah, right now I'm there was a stint in between BioShock Infinite and the game I'm playing now where I played the Walking Dead game, which that not there is a shooter called like Walking Dead Survivor, and that's not the one I'm playing. That looks awful.
Right, the 5-part episodic game.
Yes. And that one is really, I would say 80% choose your own adventure, 20% shooter. And the interesting thing for that is that all of the conversations, all of the actions you take, there is a maybe 25% chance that it'll put up a little thing that is kind of like an achievement. It pops up in the corner and it says something, but what it says instead of like you achieve this or you beat this is this person that you're interacting with at the time, this person will remember that. And it's just this little like thing that, just this little thing like, hey, whatever you did, that's gonna matter. How much it matters or whatever isn't really revealed to you until it finally happens, and you're like, oh my gosh, I have to go back and talk to this guy differently. But then now I'm so much further in the game, and it's a fun just little bit of a snippet of like, what you're doing matters. It's not as enveloping as it sounds like Dishonored is, which I really wanted to play. But the game that's currently dominating my time is The Last of Us, which is
That's the one I saw you post about.
It's made by the same people, Naughty Dog, the guys that made the Uncharted series.
Oh,
So
okay.
mechanics-wise, it plays very much like Uncharted. It is a linear storyline. There are defined kind of places to fight and everything, and it's kind of one path that way. But what's interesting in the is how you tackle the things in each kind of section. Are you can be very stealthy or not, or you can be very overt or not. I mean, it's a lot more finite in that each of those encounters is its own thing, and once you get past it, it doesn't matter so much how you did it, as long as you made it through. But what I love about it is how well they have done the world and how everything interacts with it. I mean, they've really done a great job of getting the look and feel of that kind of, somewhat cliche post-apocalyptic kind of city and experience. There is one thing that I've found though that the one kind of detracting thing about it is at one point, and I don't think this is a spoiler for the game, but it has bugged me to no end, is that at one point, this is 20 years after the whatever weird kind of event has happened to make this awful world. And one of the characters that you meet is like this 12-year-old girl, or some 12 or 13 is how old she's supposed to be. And during one of the conversations, she says, or he says, oh, is this everything you hoped for? And she says, oh, the jury's still out. And it immediately, I'm like, she would not know what a jury is. It's 20 years into the future after the fall of, society and systems as everyone knows it. I mean, if that's my only problem with the game, it's not bad, but it was something that was like, I have to stop playing for like 20 minutes to get over this.
I hear you. I've had that experience sometimes where the you can get dropped right out of the world in your mind when something like that happens.
I mean, that the only reason that was so affecting for me was so I was so invested in how the world was set up. I mean, it was amazing how quickly I got into it. I remember playing even just the there's kind of an intro scene in the game that you play, and I'd gotten to kind of a what seemed like a good stopping point, and I turned to Julie and was like, this game will completely dominate my day for the next 2 days. So it was just like, this is a great world to pull myself into. So
And what, you're playing it on the PlayStation?
I am. I think it's
Okay.
PS3 exclusive because it's
Yeah.
made by Naughty Dog, which I'm pretty sure was completely bought out by Sony. So
Well, maybe it's
the
time to try the console again. It just it sits here mostly just functioning as a Blu-ray player.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm mine goes through periods of mostly Blu-ray, and now it's going through a period of mostly gaming, so it evens out eventually. Keen. Well, I am probably in need of playing a game right now, so unless there were other things you wanted to talk about or promote, or is there anything that you're working on that you want people to hear about? I mean, our platform is small, but it is our platform.
No, I mean the big thing that I work on is marriage equality, and it was kind of nice after we got those two wins at the Supreme Court in June. It gave me a chance to at least take a little bit of a breather before diving back in and trying to win it now for the other 37 states that still don't have it. But then the other thing that's keeping us busy is that Jeff and I are planning our own wedding, which is coming up in just 50 short days, which is when Jeff tweeted about that today, every time he mentions something like that, it's a little bit of stress. But I think we've settled on a venue, and so that is taking a big load off of my mind
Sure.
because now we can really just focus on, yeah, that's the, I mean, because getting that solved really solves 90% of it. That's
Yeah.
the place, that's the food, that's the alcohol. So we can kind of relax a little bit now.
Rad. So it's funny. I was thinking about this earlier today, because I know there's been a rash of what I call realistic gaming that is out, and these are games that are simulating kind of big real world things. Like there was, train simu railroad simulator, roller coaster something, and it's taking kind of large processes that just kind of happen, or they don't just kind of happen. I mean, there are people that are orchestrating it. So there was one for running an oil rig. I saw one for releasing software. We talked about one on the show about releasing software, and what they built a mechanic in that if you had pirated it, that happens partway through your game, like that your software gets pirated, which I thought was hilarious. But I'm surprised, or maybe I just haven't looked hard enough, that there isn't a wedding planner game.
A wedding planner game. Wow. Maybe that's yeah, an unexploited niche.
Yeah, well, if someone wants to give Tom and I producer credits on that one, we can work something out.
Hey, now that I've learned after going to this panel, you learned a little bit about some Kickstarter do's and don'ts. We can take our wedding planner game to Kickstarter.
This sounds like a good plan. Let's talk about this further. Tom, it's been great having you on the show again. Thank you for demolishing an otherwise productive hour with me.
Thank you for making it so easy. I told Jeff earlier today that when I was just the guest and both hosts were here, I was completely relaxed about it. But the idea that I had to try to carry half the show for an hour was sort of had me a little worried because I feel like that there's an intersection of our geek interest, but I feel like you and Brendan share a much larger universe of that than I do. I don't see a lot of film. And so I was sort of worried about that, but my goodness, this hour has flown by.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm again, I'm always glad to have you on. We'll definitely have you on again soon in the future.
Great, I look forward to it.
Cool. Like I said, Brendan, hopefully we'll be back next week, assuming his internet baby is delivered okay. And we'll talk to you next week, guys.
Ciao.